Welcome to the Wonder Woman podcast, where we discuss a variety of subjects all pertaining to optimizing your physique, building strength, developing a strong mindset, and tools to help you win at life. I'm Michelle McDonald, and I'm the founder of the Wonder Woman coaching team. We are a community of results-driven coaches and clients who believe that we can age like never before. Hi, everybody. Michelle McDonald here for the Wonder Woman podcast. And this has been a podcast that I have wanted to do for a while. It's a podcast that I think is going to really hit home for a lot of the listeners. You know, as we get older, you know, and most of our listeners are in that 40 plus range, our risks for several health conditions goes up just because we have that privilege of getting older. And, you know, luckily, what we know now about disease, what we can do medically has really changed the game, the name of the game in terms of survival rates and all of the protocols that we can do to ameliorate the things that we face as we get older. So I really want to have a wonderful discussion with three beautiful clients and so that they can talk about their journey through cancer specifically. So I'm going to introduce them to you. We've got Kelly Garr. She survived brain cancer. And just last summer, as I was working with her, went through surgery. We've got Tamara Johnson, who is about a year and a half, I think, right, Tamara?
Yep.
With lung cancer, and she has never smoked. So this is going to be a great piece for you guys to hear about. And finally, we have Lee Fernandez, and she actually is going through some treatment right now, and she has breast cancer. So let's get started. I guess first, I'd like to hear from you three, your take on, you know, what it means to get older, those increased risk factors, the importance of being your own health advocate. How did you find out that you had a cancer and what that journey was like and what kind of, you know, information you'd like to share with our audience so that they can, you know, have some clear takeaways from this conversation, what they can do to take care of themselves. I'd like to invite Kelly, if you want to get started.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. Yes, I just had brain cancer, which is just a crazy statement. I can't even believe I just said that out loud. First, let me say just to tap on what you started with, you know, your health and as we get older. And I think the thing that is important is to recognize that actually, yes, our risks increase as we're getting older. But, you know, I just heard a story about a 22-year-old who had a brain aneurysm, you know, a couple neighborhoods away from us. And, you know, it's not something that you are used to hearing, right? So I think my biggest takeaway has been that nobody is immune from any of this. And your health is basically your biggest weapon, right? Your biggest weapon to combat anything that comes at you. So I have known about, I actually, before this tumor was removed, I had lovingly named it Hank. And I did that because when I found out, I kept thinking that, you know, something named Hank wouldn't be that scary for my kids. And so that's how I kind of had incorporated that. But in 2019, I started having headaches, like pretty significant headaches. And anyone who knows me will tell you that I don't actually get headaches ever. And so I had this period of time where it was happening quite a lot. And my doctor thought it just might be better to check the box and send me to a neurologist and just kind of clear that. So I went to the neurologist and he kept saying, oh, I'm sure it's menopause. It's menopause. It's menopause. This is menopause. That's menopause. Headaches are menopause. Everything that I said to him was menopause.
And oh, I was my like, God, oh, that's yeah. Terrible.
Oh, yeah. That was 2019. And I thought, God, what am I getting ready to walk into? Like, this is terrible. You know, like he's basically telling me I'm like on this march, right? So he said, let's just do this. He said, let's do an MRI just to rule out MS. And I thought, oh, God, I hadn't even thought about MS, right? So I said, okay, that's great. Let's go do it. So I go and I do the MRI and I get a call like maybe 24 hours later. And you know, anytime you have an MRI and you get a call 24 hours later, it's, you don't want that. You want to be like a week later, they're like, oh, we're going to fit you in somewhere for an appointment. Right. So they got me right in and he said, okay, I've got good news and I have bad news. What do you want first? And I said, I'll take the good news. And he goes, you don't have MS. And I go, okay, what's the bad news? And he said, you do have a brain tumor. And I remember being like, and I was with my husband, you know, and I think he kind of went white and I just sat there for a minute and I was like, okay, like, what do we do? And it was like, I don't know that I just didn't have that shock at that point, you know? So he was like, oh, we're going to send you to a neurosurgeon and you need to be on anti-seizure medications immediately, you know, and all this stuff. So I didn't want to take the medication until I had talked to the neurosurgeon, because it all felt like it was coming at me too fast. And I hadn't had any time to do any research. And, you know, he did very openly say, it looks like a tumor, right? The more we're talking, he's like, but until somebody goes in there, they actually can't tell you what it is. You know, it could be a scar. It could be a lesion. Like they don't know. So I met with the neurosurgeon who kind of said, it looks like it's about the size of a plain M&M, a chocolate M&M. And, you know, we're going to watch it. He's like, you don't need to be on anti-seizure medication. He's like, why are we freaking out? He's like, it's not touching anything that's, you know, going to cause you problems right now. He's like, let's just watch it and see. Cause what if it is a scar? You know, I'd actually gotten beaten up in college one night when I was walking home and I was like on the sidewalk and then I ended up on the trunk of a parked car. I got hit so hard. So there, you know, the possibility of it being a scar was there. And so, it really behaved. It wasn't really growing. And then somewhere between, you know, I would say July of 2022 and March of 2023, it started to grow. And so in March, he said, it's time for it to come out. And then I thought, well, now it's time for me to find a surgeon because I knew that I was never going to let him operate on me. I just didn't have a good connection to him. It didn't feel right to me. And anybody who knows me knows I'm all about the feeling, right? So I knew that he wasn't going to take it out. But, you know, so that's when I went and found my doctor at UCLA. And then even between March of this year and August when it came out, it had grown again. So, you know, it was just really strange that it kind of behaved for a couple of years and then just decided it was time.
Mm. So. And thank God you went in and got tested and thank God that they did that original MRI, especially if you have, you know, a doctor that is kind of saying, well, it's menopause, you know, thank God he didn't just give you medication and then send you on your way.
Yeah.
Did you ask for the MRI?
No, he ordered it. Yeah. He wanted to rule it out.
That's great. Yeah. That's good to hear.
But you want to know the funniest thing about this? And this is, you know, I totally believe I was supposed to know about this, whether, you know, God, the universe, whatever, because literally 4 days after I got my results, I did not have another headache. Like I've literally since that time never had another headache that I could tell you stopped me in my tracks. It was
crazy.
So it's
like intervention, right?
I was supposed to know. Absolutely.
You're supposed to know. Wow. That is a wild story. And I remember being with you every step of the way when you first told me, you know, looking at your file and seeing, you know, tumor called Hank that you've had for X amount of years and it's relatively benign and then getting that news. And I remember asking you, okay, what do you want to do? Because you were on a cut and you've been on a cut for a long time. Yeah. And then, you know, you're like, well, I still want to go and, you know, your habits were really, really strong, which is interesting. I mean, I think that kind of news can really trigger, you know, going off your plan and maybe going back to who you used to be, right? And how, you know, decades of coping with stress and viewing yourself in a certain way, they have a strong pull still, but not, you really didn't have that. Or did you have to coach yourself through that a little bit?
I didn't. And you know what's interesting? And I've thought about this a lot, actually. I think the thing is that my habits were the way they were because I didn't know any better. You know, I didn't have the guidance. I had grown up in a house where, you know, oh, you're sad, like I'm going to bake you cookies or whatever, you know, whatever. I mean, everybody has their thing. And so I think because I always feel so good doing what I do now, it's almost like it's not what I do, it's more who I am. So when the news came, it was like I didn't feel like I had to go do something bad to feel better. I just was like, oh, I better go to the gym and like get on the bike, or I better just keep doing what I know, you know, keeps me moving forward, because like there wasn't anything that was going to save me there. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I kind of feel like I didn't really even think much about it. I just kind of was like, God, this is crazy and I'm going to have to figure it out. But that piece of it didn't really derail me, you know. Now I'm not saying like, you know, if I'm someplace and I want to have a cookie, I'll have a cookie, you know, but it wasn't like it sent me into some like negative, you know, emotional place that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is, as a coach, it's curious, because that's exactly the moment when things like that can happen. And I'm, you know, I want to know, almost like a scientist, like, why did that woman go in this direction? You know, two equally smart, successful women. Why did this woman go in this direction? Why did this woman go in this direction? And can we bottle that? Like, can we figure that out and bottle that so that everyone can choose, you know, the red pill that takes you in this direction? That would be interesting. Know, if you're a writer, you know, maybe you can do your book.
I know, right? One of the things that I do every morning when I meditate is I always thank the girl I was. Like, in the morning when I get up and I'm thankful and I'm saying my, you know, gratitude, I'm sharing my moments of gratitude with myself. And I always thank the girl that I was, because she is the one who has done so much hard work so that I can get to where I am today. And in 6 months, I'll have to thank me today. You know, it's like, I keep thinking these different versions of myself. And I think that honors where you come from, but it also reminds you that you don't want to dishonor that person by going backwards, right? So if she did all this fighting for me and I just throw it away, it's, I'm actually dishonoring this piece of myself, just this other piece, right?
I love that. That is something that I said to clients. Yeah. And it's how I live my life too. I think of the future me, and I also think of that person that I was and all the hard things I've had to lean into. And I can't just abandon, you know, you can't abandon whatever it is that you're working on or this version of yourself. Tamara, I'd love to have you. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know who, I had a bad day probably like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And you know who helped me through it was Laura. And she sent me this little text message that was basically reminding me, don't forget about that girl who you pulled through, and now the one in the future who's pulling you through. And I was like, oh yeah, maybe, you know, and I like, I gotta go back.
Love that. It's a nice, yeah, it's like a nice book. And that brings up, you know, Tony Robbins talks about that. Can you leverage your network? Is there somebody that you can you share some details with that can, when you need it, that can give you that hook, that like word, right? Like your safe word, or, you know, remind you of who you are and what your mission is, and bring you back to planet Earth.
Tamara, I love that text message on my mirror. So just look at it if I need it.
Oh yeah. You've got to have the visual, the constant reminders. And we all do. Tamara, I'd love to hear you talk about your story, because it's so unique. And I think it just so hammers home, especially when we're healthy. I think we can really pull the wool over our eyes. Well, I feel good and things are like much better than they were. So why do I need to go get blood work, or why do I need to go get the colonoscopy? So I'd love for you to take the stage.
Well, thank you, Kelly, for sharing your story. And thanks, Michelle and Lee. But Michelle, thanks for having us all on to hopefully share our stories that will, you know, my goal is that my story would put a bug in somebody to say, hey, maybe I should go take care of myself, even though I feel fine or whatever. So a little background on me. I have not practiced for a very long time, but my bachelor's degree is in nursing. So I had a pretty good foundation for healthcare, navigating in the healthcare system in the United States. And then I also worked for a managed healthcare company a long, long time ago. So I'm familiar with navigating the financial part of it, if you will. So I have a little bit of that, and leveraging my network. I'm glad you brought that up, because you really need to make that happen when you get a diagnosis, and you'd be surprised who can help you. And so my story was, I was introduced to Joan and Michelle because I'm 61, or I will be in a month. So I think I've been a client of Annie's for 3 years, and I was just kind of getting squishy. And I always have identified as an athlete because I love sports. I'm the kid who didn't come home till the streetlights went on. And if I could do it right now, I'd be outside every day, all day, playing sports. Love it. So I am healthy, relatively healthy, obviously, except for having lung cancer, which is not a good cancer to have. I don't think any of them are, but this one was particularly scary. I go once a year to see my gynecologist, and she is incredibly smart and sits down with you before she does the exam and kind of just talks about, hey, how's your year going? Blah, 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 blah. It's my one shot, one time a year to see my doctor. And so I started looking, okay, what do women in their 60s have health issues of? And you also have to look at your own personal family background to kind of, you know, figure out, hey, are there things in my family that I need to be talking with my physician about? And, you know, lo and behold, as you know, Michelle, most women in their 60s die of heart disease. They don't die of breast cancer or ovarian cancer. I mean, they do, but that is the big, you know, killer of women in their 60s. So when I went into my doctor, I said, hey, how come every year we check the breasts, we do the bone density, we do blood work, but you never checked my heart? And she said, why are you worried about it? You're lifting weights. You lost a bunch of, you know, not a lot of weight. I didn't have a ton to lose, but you lost weight. You're fit. Your blood work's fine. I said, I'm not worried. I said, I just think it's weird. The stats don't lie. Heart disease is the number one killer of women. Can we check my heart? And she said, yeah, there's this test called a cardiac calcium score test. In the United States, it's not covered by insurance. And so I said, how much is it? And she said, probably around $200. And I was like, I can swing it. And I said, let's do it. And she said, okay. And so I went in. It's pretty easy. It's just a CT scan. You're in, you're out. And she called me a couple of weeks later and she said, hey, good news. Your heart is A-okay, perfect. Your score is a zero. But there's something called an ancillary finding, meaning while the radiologist was looking at my heart, because your heart's by your lungs, he noticed a spot. And she said, we want you to go see a pulmonary specialist. And she gave me the name of what the spot is. So, of course, I'm, you know, Googling. And it can be from a lot of things, but it can be from lung cancer. And I thought, okay, well, you know, let's just go find out what it is. And I will tell you, as a nurse and talking to my friends who are nurses, a lot of times people will say, like Kelly did not say, oh, I have a lump. I'm afraid of what's going to happen. So I'm not going to do anything about it. And that is, you know, obviously it's just as scary as all this is. You just got to get to the bottom of what's going on and you have to be persistent with your own healthcare and advocate for yourself. So I went to see a pulmonary specialist and he pulled up the scan and said, I don't like what I see, but they really weren't looking at the spot. It was more of a general CT. I want to get a closer look in that area. And I said, okay, great. When do you want to do that? And he said, now. And I went, uh-oh. So I walked across to the hospital. I got another scan. And he called me 2 hours later and said, I've already talked to my colleagues. We still don't like what we see. We want you to go get a biopsy. So I did. I went in and I got a lung biopsy. They had great nurses. I mean, just fabulous. And I was like, oh my gosh, I kept saying, I work out. I eat my vegetables. I've never smoked. This can't be happening to me. This cannot be happening to me. I could think of a million other cancers. This one just took me by like shock. So I went in, I got the biopsy. You know, and I like to connect with the doctor. So as this guy is going to put a needle, you know, through my chest, I said, hey, I thought about you all night last night. And I was wondering, is he watching Netflix with his wife eating a popcorn or something? And I'm like, I barely go to sleep tonight because I'm just like, oh, he goes, actually, I did think about you because the location is a little tricky and this and that. So anyway, and I go and it came back troubling, but not conclusive for cancer. So they did a PET scan next. And I won't bore you with the details, but that kind of came up, still not crazy, but it lit up a bit. And then they said, I think you need to get this thing out because the 5-year survival rate for lung cancer is like 28%, which freaked me out because I'm like, oh, that sucks. And so I said, okay. So I went to go see the pulmonary surgeon and then talk about leveraging your network. And he said, yes, you need to have your left lobe taken out of your, one of your lobes taken out of your lung. And I just was like, what? And I don't know why I was shocked by that. But then I started to think, okay, now you really got to get serious, girl. Where are you going to go? Because that makes a huge difference, in my opinion, because of my background, on not just who's doing your surgery or your treatment, but the facility there. Because it's not just this part, the doctor, it's the whole network around it, the labs that they're going, sending your cells to, whatnot. And, you know, I'm lucky enough that I live in Texas, and I said, hey, to this guy, because I was not in Texas at that moment. I said, if you had this cancer and you lived in Texas, where would you go? And I already knew what he was going to say, which was MD Anderson. It's a cancer center in Houston. And I said, and who would you have do the surgery? That, which was my nice way of saying, hey, I want a second opinion, but you don't really want to say that necessarily, but you should. Absolutely, you should get things looked at. Like Kelly said, she knew that neurosurgeon was not going to be the gal or the guy, right?
Mm-hmm. So could you repeat that? Because I love that you said that, Tamara. You asked your friend, who is a specialist himself, or was he a specialist in this piece?
No, this, I asked the physician in his office. He was a pulmonary surgeon. Mm-hmm. I said, if you were to have this done to yourself, where would mm-hmm. you go and who would you have do it?
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a phrase and a name, and it is smart. I mean, I could go on. I mean, sometimes I say, go take a tour of the cancer center, walk down the hallway if they let you, and ask the nurses, hey, who's good at this? Because sometimes they will tell you things that you just wouldn't normally know.
Interesting. So, and you're a nurse, right? So you're
and I'm a nurse. So mm-hmm. I know. And so talk about leveraging a network. So, you know, trying to get through to this physician would take months. A friend of mine had said, hey, I have a friend who's a pulmonary surgeon. I met him when I lived in Bali. Do you want me to call him? And I kept saying, no, I don't want you to call him. I mean, you know, I've got a surgeon, you've got a surgeon, da, da, da. And then when I realized how serious this was, I called her up. I said, hey, tell me the name of this guy. She gave it to me. I looked him up. He is world renowned. And I said, I'd love to talk to him. So he called me. And that's when he was telling me it's not just the doctor that's doing this work, because he knew both of the surgeons, because he had trained both of them in this robotic technology. He said, it's the background, right? So when I went to MD Anderson, I looked at my husband. I'm like, I think if you had cancer in your left pinky, they have a department for that here. There's just, you know, they're looking at lung cells all day, every day, thousands, you know, I don't know, thousands, but it's not like a one-off. So anyway, he said, hey, I know this surgeon. I have a cell phone number. If I call him and he says he'll talk to you, you need to pick the phone up. And I said, okay. And I, a week later, was at MD Anderson, still inconclusive whether it was cancer. And then when I went in and they did say you need to have part of your lung taken out, absolutely, because it's cancer. I have non-small cell lung cancer. I'll stop for a sec because that's kind of a long story. But they took out part of my lung, tested it. It was lung cancer. And they took out like 22 lymph nodes, and I had, you know, six. It's a pretty cool technology. I watched a surgery afterwards, and it's amazing what they are doing now instead of just cutting your chest open. But that's sort of my little bit of my story. But then when I got home and I realized, okay, let's look at what non-small cell lung cancer is. Let's look at all kinds of stuff. And I went down the rabbit hole, and on my follow-up visits, I started asking a lot more questions, which gave me a lot more answers. And I asked for a lot of tests that they weren't going to do, but I needed to know because that's just my personality. So I found out I have a mutation. I learned about that. You know, I looked at a genetic component, and I'll kind of stop. But when you get a diagnosis like this, I called it like all these lanes. You've got okay, the initial shock of holy crap. And then you go, okay, I have a surgical component, and then maybe I'm going to have a medical component, which would be oncology, radiation. You've got your spiritual, psychological component you got to deal with. In the United States, this stuff is expensive, so you've got to navigate all that. And then, you know, you can look at diet and lifestyle and on. So you sort of have to ask very specific questions in each of those lanes, because every person's going to be, you know, your surgeon is going to go cut, cut, cut. Medical is going to go, you know, radiate medicine. Not everyone talks about lifestyle and diet because there aren't as many conclusive studies about all this, which is unfortunate, but that's where we're at. But so that's kind of the lead up to my story. So there you go.
And I think you left out some bits too, like you were going to go on a fishing trip
Okay. So I was the day I found out from the pulmonary surgeon that he wanted to in California that he wanted to take part of my lung out. I was driving to the airport after the appointment because I was in a all girl and one guy deep sea fishing tournament down in Baja California, like right off the coast of Laredo, Mexico. And so I said to this gentleman who was gracious enough to call me, this physician that was a friend of mine's friend, I'm going to be in Mexico on a boat fishing, but you can call my husband and he will pick up the phone and I waive all my HIPAA rights and and just talk to him. So yeah. And we didn't win, but we caught a lot of really cool fish. It was awesome.
Which is amazing that you were going through all of this and still able to go on that trip and be present to that. And I think that is very interesting. And I want to definitely talk about that later in the podcast, you know, what was going on there. But, you know, so your journey was significantly different than Kelly's journey. You come from that nursing background. I think you have some similarities in that you really approached it from almost a strategic, I feel like a very strategic, okay, this is the news. Now what are the doors that I have to open now? Yeah. And I think you both chose to face it head on. As you said, Tamara, you know, you didn't run away from it. You're like, all right, I have this thing. Let's pursue this relentlessly.
Can I just add, because I want to just make clear to the people listening, is that I had zero symptoms, nothing. I mean, I'm on my Peloton 45 minutes. I'm like all good. Not one symptom. And when I got to MD Anderson, they're like, they call me lucky, unlucky. Lucky because I found it early. It was found very early. Because typically in lung cancer, you don't find out you have it until it's well down the pipeline. And so if I can say anything, because I talked with Annie a lot about why the heck did this happen to me, is, you know, because of my background as a health, you know, in health, and then as an educator, my mission is to tell your listeners and women, prevention, get checked. Even if you don't feel like anything's wrong, there are so many tools out there now, but you have to ask. You just have to ask and be persistent. And if the first physician tells you, hey, it's menopause, or blah, 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 you know, as a health person, I'm not perfect. No physician's perfect. They're doing the best they can with the knowledge they have and the training that they have. But when I felt like I had no power, once I got diagnosed, I kept saying, okay, how can I get my power back? Well, I can't control the cancer, but I can control, you know, my financial part of it and being, you know, having, you know, calling the insurance company and making sure stuff's going to get covered. So when those bills start coming in, or asking if that's not your strong suit, you find someone that maybe can help you with all of those components. But I am a huge, huge advocate of prevention and screening, and even if you feel like nothing is wrong.
Such an important message.
And if it weren't for Michelle and Joan saying, yeah, hey, when you're an older gal, you can be super fit and take charge of your health, I really wouldn't have gone in about the heart disease. I wouldn't have asked. And that's what saved my life.
Yeah, it's so important to, again, do that due diligence. And it's funny for both of you, there was a little bit of luck, you know, like with Kelly, there's that little bit of luck that her doctor, you know, volunteered for the MRI just to screen for MS. I mean, it's a headache, right? and you've got, you know, you've got kids to take care of, you've got all the stresses that we have at our age, plus the fluctuations of hormones. I mean, it would make sense to say, yeah, it's menopause, or, you know, here, take this aspirin, or maybe we should put you on estrogen or something. And thank God there was that MRI and Tamara, same thing. I mean, you know, thank God they were able to see that dot. And I don't know, but I mean, well, I guess for now you guys have looked at, I mean, I look at x-rays, I've looked at ultrasounds. I mean, it just looks like gobbledygook. I can't see anything. They're like pointing things out. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. I'm like, I don't see what they're looking at. It's a bunch of white and black lines all over the place. So the fact that they were able to be focusing on your heart, but still catch that you know, probably like that dark spot. Just what luck, because again, getting these things early on, you know, the chances of a good outcome just dramatically improve. And also, you know, the interventions early on are different than the kinds of interventions you have to get into with late stage stuff. Lee, how are you feeling?
Yeah, good. It's amazing listening to, you know, Kelly and Tamara's stories, and there's so many similarities, but there is definitely differences as well. And obviously over in the UK where I am, the healthcare systems are slightly different as well. So I will touch on that. But yeah, just a little background about myself, you know, that like I'm 50 year old now, going to be 51, so, which is exciting that I'm actually getting to get to 51. And when you go through all this, you know, it certainly puts things in a different light. So I'm very lucky in the sense I have a beautiful nearly 25-year-old daughter who's always around me, and she has a total love for fitness as well. So it's fantastic. So she keeps my spark alive with the fitness, which is great. But one thing I want to throw in here is just to say that over the years, you know, I've worked in sort of financial banking and the corporate world. So there has been a lot of stress in my life for many, many years. And I can't remember if it was Tamara or Kelly, one of them touched on to say around lifestyle. And I truly believe that lifestyle is a key component to getting cancer. You know, we all have cancerogenic cells, and but are these actually going to come to fruition? And why do they come to fruition? People talk about that it's because it's a genetic cancer that you've got. I remember that was one of the things that they first told me, oh, it's genetic. But, you know, when I look into different things, and we can touch on that after I tell you my story about the cancer diagnosis. But I definitely believe that there's so many contributory factors throughout a life. In my life, I'm talking about, you know, with regards to, you know, diet, lifestyle, as in alcohol, you know, partying, all these things that I did from a very, very young age, and which I absolutely loved. But, you know, when I look back and I look and I reflect on these, you know, it just is such a huge, huge component, I believe, in why I got the breast cancer, you know, because of that inflammation that's goes through your body. It's just when you start to dig deep, like Tamara has done as well, it's quite fascinating. And I think with my financial background and loving data, you know, you do become a bit of a nerd about looking into, you know, why has this happened, you know, and what other things can I do to prevent it, you know. So just wanted to obviously to mm-hmm. say that. Mm-hmm. But my first diagnosis, ladies and listeners, came in April 2022. I had no sort of side effects or as such. You know, there was
no symptoms. You mean?
No symptoms, no. You know, I was doing great. I was over in Tenerife sorting out my retreats and sorting out all the, you know, the activities, the food, the meals, all the bits and pieces that you need to get together for your retreats. I should have said that I'm a yoga teacher as well, for those that don't know. So, you know, running my retreats was something that I had worked to. So, as I say, having a financial banking background and corporate background, in the January of 2022, I had decided that I was handing my notice in and going forth and running my own fitness and wellness consultancy. And this is where we were at. So as I say, I've totally fit and healthy, you know, ready to go, ready to, I'd given up my banking, ready to run my retreats in 2022. And then I had one day, one afternoon, actually, I didn't have any meetings, and I thought, I'm going to put on the swimsuit and go down to the pool. So that's what I was doing. I was getting myself ready. And when I was putting my sun cream on my left breast, it felt like on fire. It just felt like, you know, just like a burning fire. And so I went over to the mirror, and I had this big red boob. You know, this my left boob was just like bright red, and it was just really bizarre. And because I hadn't been out in the sun, this was my first sort of free afternoon to get up to the pool and go and get a bit of sunshine. So I got myself ready because I was just like, well, this is really weird. And I got myself ready, went up to the pool, and that whole time that I was lying at the pool, it was just going over and over in my head. What is this? What's going on? You know, this is not right. And I was travelling home the next again day. So that must have been the Monday that I was travelling back home. Because I'll never forget that on the Tuesday, I phoned my doctor. So we have like what we called a general practitioner that we would go and initially see. So I managed to get, like, I said to them, I says, this is quite urgent, you know, can I come in and see you? So I did manage to get in to see a doctor that I hadn't seen before. And the redness had actually gone down in my chest. So I don't know whether it was the heat and some of that, you know, maybe contributed to it. But I went to show the doctor, just the general practitioner, and she got me up on the bed and she checked me. No, Lee, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, there's nothing there. You know, there's nothing. It looks fine. I can't see anything wrong. So I got up off the bed. She was like, right, we'll get up off the bed. And, you know, we sat and I said to her, I says, I really feel there is something not right here. So she went back and checked me again. And she just couldn't see what I was seeing. So it was quite concerning, to be honest. But so basically I got dismissed, and I think it was Tamara had said, you know, somebody tells you something's fine, but you know you've got a feeling in your heart of hearts that it's not. Don't stop there, you know, keep pushing. So in the UK, we have private insurance, private medical as well. And so luckily enough for myself, I did have private medical insurance. So that Tuesday afternoon, I basically phoned my insurance and I managed to get an appointment. And it's funny because when Tamara had said about who do you pick, which surgeon do you pick, which consultant do you pick? So, I mean, and I had to just go on. Basically, it was at that point, because I just wanted to see someone as quick as possible, I just had to pick from basically a time. Yeah, they could see me at this time on the Thursday, and then the gentleman's name kind of thing that ended up becoming my surgeon. So so I got taken and went in on the Thursday to where they do, it's a breast clinic. And basically I was in that clinic till near on midnight that night because of what they found. You know, I think my appointment was maybe 6 o'clock in the evening, and they took me through. I had MRIs, I had like numerous amounts of checks and two different doctors, consultants look at me, then ultrasounds. And when I was getting my ultrasound, the doctor or the radiologist, which she was lovely, and I could tell with her face that she had found something sinister. And I said to her, I says, I don't know whether you're allowed to tell me or not. She says, I can tell you anything you want, she says. And I says, is this bad? She says, well, there's something there, she says. She says, that's, and that was her sort of words to me. And then following that, it was actually the Easter weekend, so I had to wait until the Monday. And I was doing all this myself because I didn't want to tell anybody, like tell my daughter, or tell my husband was actually away in another country at the time. And I didn't want to tell anybody because it was like, what am I going to put at that point? What am I telling them? I didn't know if I had a diagnosis. I didn't. My husband wasn't in the country. My daughter was, you know, young, in my opinion. You know, I didn't want to burden her with something that might not have been anything. So, yeah, it was quite a week or so of getting to the point of when they actually gave me the diagnosis. And that was following, you know, getting all the scans and different things. And at one point, one of the breast nurses said to me, she went, you must tell your husband something's going on and get him back into this country. And at that point, that was a kind of triggering as well to say, well, okay, there's definitely something sinister here. So so that was the point to getting, you know, my diagnosis. My husband normally takes about, from where he was, it normally takes about 5 days to get home, but he managed to get home in three. They were really super with him and got him on different quicker flights and things like that. So that was really great. But very interesting, and I'll share this with you, because having habits that you've instilled in me, Michelle, you know, from when we did our transformation back in 2020, you know, and having my daily musts that, you know, that I adhere to them, you know, 100% now. but during that period, at that first diagnosis in April, I must say that things went to the side, you know, my daily habits. You know, I was still doing my meditation, but, you know, obviously getting to the gym and, you know, my nutrition, it all went quite, I would say, south because of, I'm saying because of, I don't actually know, 100, probably because of the amount of drugs that they were going to be putting me on and put me on. And then the fatigue that I experienced through the period from April to probably October, that fatigue and the amount of sort of sleep and not being interested in nutrition, you know, whereas like, you know, your macros was like my thing, right? Okay, gosh, you know, and like Cara would laugh at me, my protein, my carbs and my fat, and even her friends laugh, oh, Lee and her protein, her carbs and her fat. But during that period, I must say my appetite, my interest in food, and I mean, I definitely exercised because my husband would not let me not. And he's not a big exercise fan, but he knows how important it is to me. And he would encourage me every day to get out. And if I couldn't get out walking, I would walk out to the car and he would take me out in the car so that I was going somewhere and then getting fresh air. I just wanted to, it's funny, isn't it, having such instilled habits and musts into your routine. And yet for that period, for me, it definitely went out the window, I would say.
I think everyone's journey through something like that is so personal. And I think as we're going through these experiences, likely having that sense of compassion for yourself, leaning into your network, you know, your family, your community as well, and just doing the best that you can. I mean, that's all anyone can ask of themselves, right? So,
yeah, definitely. And that's, and you know, to actually be getting to the point, you know, when, you know, obviously in October I had went and got the first mastectomy. And, you know, after that, things really started to get back to what I would say is my normal, you know, and where I am just now, you know, getting out, doing my walks, you know, adhering to my musts and the habits are really in play, you know, from October 22, you know, and I eventually got back into the gym in December 2022. And that was just an amazing day. I remember going with Cara. She was over in Tenerife. We were in Tenerife at the time. And she was over for 2 weeks at Christmas. And we went to the gym for the first time. And it was an amazing day. And then that was us. That was us right back into it, you know, for like the fortnight that we were away. We were like down at that gym. And, you know, I had a lot of weight that I had put on, not as a result of the eating or the nutrition. It was probably lack of, you know, because, I, you know, the you know, I wasn't adhering to like my macro plan, and I wasn't eating well, or I wasn't eating a lot, and then the steroids put on, you know, the water retention and the bloating, and that was difficult. But you know, working through it, you know, as I say, well, you met me and Michelle in summer of 2023, and that was my goal, was to get to Vegas, you know, from the December 2022, you know, to get to Vegas and get, you know, myself back into a really fantastic position and get myself back. And it was really, really good. And I think that's having, you know, these habits, these musts instilled into your being, in a sense, you know, they just come back to you. And I suppose that's where I'm at now, you know, in November 2023, getting another diagnosis. But it felt different this time. It felt different in the sense of, you know, I can deal with this. Not that I didn't deal with it the last time, or the beastie, as we called it, because I like that, Kelly, when you called your one Hank. I had the beastie. So, you know, where we are now, you know, just trying to make sure that we rid this second beastie and get things back on track. But I feel like I'm much stronger in myself. I'm much stronger that, like, my habits and my musts are just following me. And we're doing what, or I'm doing what I can to fight this and stay strong.
Yeah, and
you're pretty incredibly.
Oh, thank you, Kelly.
I love for you, you know, that peacefully about how important it is to follow your gut instinct, you know, and, you know, we have these varying healthcare systems, you know, we've got the healthcare system in Canada, which I'm from, and it's very, very hard to go through that system and get quality care just the way it's set up. I think in America, it's following that suit, but people that can't afford that private care, you know, it's a different system. And it's so important that we do, you know, advocate for ourselves. And that might that might mean, you know, as Tamara did, making sure that you're going in and getting the work done that's applicable for your demographic. So knowing what that demographic is. And I don't think everyone has to be out there Googling. I think there's some really great resources, and I'll leave those in the links. I know Cleveland Clinic is pretty great in the States, and they're in Canada as well. I'm not sure what you have, Lee, in the UK, but there are resources that kind of outline quite clearly like what your risk category is at a particular age. And we just, you know, need to mainstream this stuff, really. Mm-hmm. Just doing your due diligence. I know after listening to Tamara's story, because I stayed with her last weekend, you know, she's got me fired up. I do not, you know, I'm healthy as a horse, and probably a lot of listeners are like me. Like, I don't have any problems. I don't like to go to the doctors, but I know that I am at an increased risk of, you know, I probably should get tested for lung cancer simply because I grew up in a household with a father that smoked, and I was born 1970. And so you could smoke in the car and you could smoke on airplanes and all of this stuff. And I worked in bars. I worked in, you know, so my exposure is probably, I used to run along the side of the road. I mean, luckily I didn't live in a city, but anyways, these are the things, you know, unlikely mm-hmm. that I have a problem with CVD or metabolic syndrome, but, you know, getting a colonoscopy, you know, we're at a heightened risk of that. It's a very common cancer. So these are things that we need to be aware of and just do our due diligence. And if you feel like, you know, you're not getting the care that you need, be empowered going private, be empowered to follow through with that, because, you know, your health is all you've got at the end of the day. And those early interventions are important. And we're not saying to be scared and have that kind of a mindset, but in fact, be empowered and just do the best you can to check off those boxes.
You're so right, Michelle, with that, you know, and, you know, because, you know, you're talking about things that have happened years ago that have impacted how, you know, like your lifestyle. You know, and like that was, you never chose that. That just happened. You know, like for me, you know, when I look back, you know, like I've had a sugar addiction for years. You know, I drank alcohol from a very young age, which, you know, makes my blood boil when I think about society and society allowing that. And then I think about, like, you know, sleep, such a huge, huge and easy thing. But, you know, if we're not getting enough sleep, and I think about, you know, my corporate world and the hours I would put in, you know, in my work. And I just think about these three lifestyle factors that, you know, are so detrimental, you know, to our health. So, you know, health is everything.
It is. So, gals, I want to thank you for diving in here with this first piece. And we're definitely, you know, going to carry this over into a couple of episodes. I think this is so important to get out there, this message of being your own health advocate, doing the due diligence, really pushing through the medical systems, whatever country that you're in. It's so important. And whether it's a cancer or whether I said, you know, like I said, it's something else. It's so important to advocate for yourself. So I want to thank you guys for sharing that story. I mean, I'm crying. I get so emotional at these things. I'm in there in the arena with you.
I am just speechless because the similarity in terms of you feeling that hot, tender breast. And then by the time you got to your physician, you know, there was a bit of a mildness to that symptom, but you stuck to it. And then Kelly, the same thing with the headaches, and then they went away. It's like, it blows me away that the universe or whomever was like, hey, you know, I'm going to send you a message. And a lot of us just swipe it and go, oh, no, I'm fine.
Yeah. I'm good. Michelle actually just said it the other day, right? Like, first your message is like a teeny tiny pebble.
Right.
And it might be like a rock, you know, right? You don't want to wait till you get hit by the boulder, right?
Right.
And I think, yeah, advocating for yourself and, you know, I mean.
So important, isn't it?
It is. Mm-hmm. It really is. And, you know, Lee, to make you feel a little bit better about going south on the diet piece, I was just in Boston with my daughter and I wrote to Michelle, like, I don't know what happened. I just got taken down for a couple of days. And I was like, I'm not eating. I don't want to eat anything. And then what mm-hmm. I did eat was like a little piece of toast that I made like in my waffle maker. I'm like, I think I can eat this maybe. So I think when your body doesn't want, you know, I mean, you're going through so much. It's like, I think the biggest thing that I've learned is, you know, you do your best, like Michelle said, but also you have to really be gentle with yourself because, you know, you're navigating new waters, right? We were all navigating new waters. And I think part of that is grace. So
it's definitely having that grace for yourself, but it's the strangest thing as well. When you're so used to like having a massive appetite, getting to the gym, having lots of food with you, always having food in your bag, to being completely opposite. It's quite bizarre, actually. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. So I would love to tell you I'm the poster child for, you know, having these great habits through this, but I struggled and did not. I'm like, I don't really want to measure my food. And my coach was like, okay, well, are you happy with where you're at? And I said no. And she said, well, then you're going to have to go back and start measuring your food. And I was like, you're right. I mean, but it took me, I mean, I'd say a long time. You know, I'm just finally now going, all right, maybe I am going to be here a little longer than I originally thought, right? And so, you know, how does that look right now for you? And so I'm kind of going back to the habits that served me. But I will tell you, Kelly, just like you, opposite in sense, you wanted to stay in the hospital. Is that right?
I did. Cause they had just cut me from ear to ear. I was like, wait, why are you letting me go?
So for me,
you want me to leave? But here you bring me fruit. Nobody's going to bring me fruit at home.
So what I did is, you know, I had a chest tube. So they have to make sure your lung doesn't fully collapse after surgery. And because I've been in the healthcare system, I was like, get out of bed and start walking immediately if you can. And I was strong, right? I could squat. I could do all the things I needed to do. And I was like, getting out of bed. Every, like, you know, I just go around the nurse's station and I'm looking in the rooms and I'm looking at people who are not strong and they can't get out of bed. And that causes issues for recovery. I'm not saying that being strong and being able to get out of bed made my recovery any necessarily, you know, more positive, but I could get up and walk and go. And they gave me the option. I stayed in the hospital one night because my chest tube was clear. And they said, my doctor was like, hey, you can stay. This is like a big thing. And I said, no. And he said, just stay nearby in case you have a problem because you need to come back to the ER, because I wanted to sleep because they, you know, you're on, you get poked and prodded all night long. And there's, you know, the sounds of the IVs and the alarms. And I was like, I'll just go stay in a hotel and stay until, you know, you're comfortable that I can go home, which is what I did. That was my choice. But I knew, I also kind of know what to look for. So I was okay with it. But for me, that was my habit of being in really good shape served me very, very well.
I get that as well, Tamara, about getting up out of the bed. You know, like they want you to stay there. I think they wanted to, for me, my first operation, stay in for 5 days. But I just wanted to get up and get out because, like you're saying, they're coming in through the night. They're doing your blood pressure. They're doing tests. They're taking bloods. You know, I remember when my daughter came to pick me up and I was sitting ready with the bag packed and on the edge of the bed. And she was just like, I can't believe this. She says, it's like you're running out of here. I was like, yeah, get me home.
Yeah. There's a lot of psychology by being a patient. You know, you take off all your clothes, you put on this gown, and all of a sudden now you're the sick person. You're like, I don't want to be her.
No, definitely not.
Gals, thank you so much for sharing your story. Definitely going to have you back on the show because I want to, you know, tease out some of the, you know, the follow-up and where you're at now. I think it's really an important part of the message. So thank you so much, Kelly and Tamara and Lee. And Lee, our hearts are with you. So I know you're in the middle of going through your second round of therapy because some of the cancer cells have come back. And we know that you're going to kick this just like you did the first round.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I am fighting, girls. I'm fighting.
Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Wonder Woman podcast. You know, we don't make money from this podcast. Our mission is to get as much great information out there to the widest audience possible to help more people like you thrive at any age. You could really help us out by sharing this episode with a friend who needs to hear this, or share the link to your favorite episode in your stories or whatever social platform you use. Second, please leave a rating and review on ratethispodcast.com/Wonder Woman. You're not just showing your support for the show, you're also helping other women find us. And finally, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any episodes. Thanks again for tuning in.